Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming early on a Friday morning at the end of the conference. You really appreciate it, and this is a really great crowd. Today, we'll be talking about the Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships process and how the framework can be potentially used to address health inequities. I don't have a slide, but we did, both Cynthia and I both indicated that we don't have any financial interest to disclose. And I will have Cynthia introduce herself more fully when her presentation comes up, but she, Cynthia Nunnally, is from the Memphis Shelby County Health Department, and their health department has been one of the many MAP communities that have done really extraordinary work with the framework, working with their communities, and so she'll be sharing her experiences from Tennessee. So before I really begin, I do want to put out the disclaimer that I'm not a health equity expert. We actually at NACHO, and I'm from the National Association of County and City Health Officials, so at NACHO we have an entire team dedicated to health equity and social justice. And so while I'll be covering the content related to that, some questions I may defer to our team at NACHO because they're really the experts on the topic. But at NACHO, I lead our assessment and planning work. A lot of that work is associated with the MAP process, as well as the National Public Health Performance Standards Program, and some other broader work associated with community health assessment and improvement planning. But today, what we'll be talking about are kind of concepts and terms associated with health equity, social justice work, just to make sure that we're all kind of making sure that we're all thinking about the terms in the same way. And this is the way we're defining some of these terms. There's a debate about those definitions, but this is coming from the NACHO standpoint. We'll be just briefly talking about health equity in terms of a public health, in the public health world and what it means for practice, and then thinking about the MAP process as a framework to address health inequities. And then Cynthia will be sharing her stories from the field about how she started that conversation around health inequities using the Unnatural Causes documentary series and the supplemental tools that are available as a part of that documentary to really engage the community and have discussions around health inequity. And then NACHO has many resources associated with both social justice as well as the MAP process. So we have a little brochure in the back, but part of these slides, which will be available online, describes the different types of resources that we have and that really are designed for practitioners in the field. I also want to do a shout out for this book called Tackling Health Inequities Through Public Health Practice. This book is edited by Richard Hofrichter and Rajiv Bhatia, who is with the Bay Regional Health, I forget what the whole acronym stands for, but they're practitioners thinking about health equity. And so this book talks about the theory, how different local health departments and communities have applied the theory to address health inequities. And it's a really great resource. It's available, I don't know if the exhibit hall is still open, but online. And if you're interested, we have a promotional code to give you a discount on the book. So if you are interested in that, you can come see me at the end of the session. So in looking at some of these terms that we often hear about, we hear about health disparities, health inequity, social determinants of health inequity, social justice, and really teasing out what these terms mean and the difference between them sometimes gets a little bit confusing. And we like to hear there's usually a term of the year, you know, and you, lately we're hearing a lot about social determinants, but really what is at the heart of these terms? And so in thinking about the term health disparities, this is something at NACHO we try to really avoid talking about health inequities in terms of health disparities. The reason being that disparities is looking at the differences in populations, but really isn't making a comment about the reasons why those differences exist. There's no real value judgment associated why there are disparities. It's just kind of a description of a difference. Versus when we think about health inequity, we're making the value statement that there are systemic, unfair, unjust, and avoidable differences in health status and mortality rates. And we'll go into a little bit about what it means to have systemic causes to health inequities. And then thinking about social determinants of health inequity, it's really focusing in on the economic, social, and also the political conditions that influence the health of individuals, communities, and jurisdictions that really are at the heart of why we are seeing these differences. And then social justice is kind of the framework or the way to really think about how to tackle and address these inequities. And they include economic, social justice, political justice, the idea of participation, democracy, liberation, autonomy, really getting at the root causes as to why there are unequal access to conditions that lead to equity. Another way to think about this, and this comes straight from the book that I talked about earlier, if we think about how social, political, economic institutions are organized, those are really at the heart of the inequality that we're seeing, the social, economic, political inequality, which then influences the structuring of life challenges. So if there's inequality in kind of the social, economic, political spheres, then you're seeing this unequal opportunities in life that ultimately lead to health inequities. So in thinking about this, this is kind of a large topic that we're thinking about, you know, how do we dig deep and what does that mean for practitioners? And so this, using a social justice framework, thinking about this central question about why is there inequality and how can we change our organizational structure, our policies and practices to eliminate inequity. So using this social justice framework and applying it to public health practice, here are just some examples of the paradigm shift that this framework is trying to challenge us to apply. And it's a shift from thinking about personal responsibility, individual behavior. While that is important, the social justice framework is really challenging us to think about the social responsibility to protect the common good. It's also a shift when we think about the causes of inequity from being solely based in genetics, behavior, accidents, to really thinking about racism, class, gender exploitation. And thinking about the resolutions, the solutions to inequity, it's a shift from behavioral change, the focus on treatment of systems, to really thinking about how can we tackle racism, classism, and gender exploitation. And really there's this political dimension to resolutions. And then finally, just a general approach, thinking about our general thinking around health inequity and acceptance, shifting away from an acceptance of risk as a fact of life to kind of this idea of an activist perspective to creating conditions for good health. So we're broadening our framework and then also looking at those underlying economic, social, political structures or institutions at the heart of inequity. So we can use those that framework, that paradigm shift, to really change the way we ask questions. And these are just a couple of examples. So a common question that we often hear, who lacks healthcare coverage and why? So using the social justice framework, perhaps we should be asking what policy changes would redistribute healthcare resources more equitably in our community. Instead of only asking about how can we create more green space, bike paths, have a good community design, it's a shift to thinking about and asking what policies and practices by government, commerce, discourage access to transportation, recreational resources, nutritious food, and so on, in certain neighborhoods that are disproportionately affected, for instance, in those neighborhoods where health is the poorest. And then when, in addition to thinking about, well, why do people smoke, drink, or other behaviors associated with poor health, start asking about the social conditions and economic policies that predispose people to the stress that encourages these behaviors. So this framework is really forcing us to really think deeply about questions that get to the underlying reasons why we see inequity. So in practice, and currently in the field, what we're seeing is this social justice framework, thinking about health inequities in these very common areas of public health practice, workforce development, community engagement, thinking about how to communicate public health, building partnerships and strategic alliances, advocacy, work around monitoring and surveillance around health, policy development and analysis, integration of disciplines and agency work, so thinking about multiple sector public health work, thinking about outside the silos, really thinking about really what public health is trying to do overall, what is the mission of public health, and then thinking about this idea of redistributing, redeploying organizational resources. When we think about the MAP process specifically, these areas really kind of rise to the top. And a lot of the work that MAP communities do is around engaging communities, the idea of partnerships, advocacy, really identifying these underlying policy issues that affect the health of communities, advocating for change, really thinking outside of the silos and identifying resources and redistributing them more meaningfully. So the work that we're seeing in the health equity social justice community really can translate over into communities using the MAP process. So I've talked about MAP as an acronym, and I just want to see a show of hands. How many are you are familiar with the process? Okay, so a good number of you. For those of you who are not familiar, again, the acronym stands for Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships. And here what you see is our just basic definition of what the process is trying to do. So it's a community-wide, what we like to call a community-owned strategic planning process for improving the public's health. And it provides a framework, a method for communities to prioritize their public health issues, which is very dependent on assessment data that is collected through the process, identifying resources, assets in the community for addressing them, and as part of the process, communities take action and actually implement a plan. The other way to think about it, we call it a community health improvement process, a public health system performance improvement process, the idea being using assessment data to really inform what is at the heart of health issues in a community, and then part of the process is creating a plan, implementing, evaluating a plan in a very iterative way. So we're really trying to transform the way public health practice is going on. It's not reactive. We really are looking for a proactive, well-informed, strategic way of thinking about public health improvement in communities, and really rested in the idea that the community has to be part of the solution. So I'll show you the model and the phases that we talk about as the framework of the MAP process, and a lot of the phases will look very similar to work going on in communities, but the philosophy underlying the process is really what makes it unique, and the creators of the MAP process, who were a combination of practitioners, academics, other experts in public health, came together to think about what would be required to really shift the way that public health practice is occurring, and the philosophy is really what underlies the MAP process and makes it unique. But to kind of summarize those things, we have three keys to MAP, and this idea of strategic thinking, strategic planning is really key, well-informed, thinking about the future so we can be more proactive, involving stakeholders, involving community residents to be part of the solution. This idea of community-driven process, there's a lot of variability in how the MAP process is implemented, but the ideal that we really try to push is that community residents are a part of this process. They are mobilized in addition to our traditional public health partners. They are part of articulating a vision for where the community wants to go, and almost in a community participatory approach to assessments, we highly encourage community to be part of the design, the data collection, the interpretation of what data is saying about their community, and then, of course, being part of the solution. Another key to the MAP process is this idea of a local public health system, and I'm sure many of you have seen our jelly bean diagram before. And this is really a kind of a simplistic diagram of a concept that in practice may look very different. But the idea here being is that all of these entities are responsible for ensuring the public's health. You have your what we call traditional public health hospitals like health centers, mental health, but then you have your non-traditional partners like civil rights organizations, social workers, faith-based institutions. So all of them are really part of the system and really should be part of a MAP process. So here is the MAP model. What you'll see down the center are the six phases of the MAP process, and even though it's presented pretty linearly in practice, it definitely does not look that way. But essentially, communities mobilize themselves, they understand really what's involved, the commitment in using the MAP framework, start thinking about their structure for engaging in this process, and so that's part of that organizing for success, mobilizing their partners that will really help lead and steer the process, and then also start engaging the community around being part of an effort towards addressing health issues through collective action. So once everyone's organized, partners are starting to come around the table, the second phase is to create a vision. So articulating where the community as a collective wants to go. And this is really kind of setting the goal, saying all of this work is ideally going to lead us to our collective vision. So after the community articulates that vision, they go through a series of four assessments, which you'll see in the arrows, in the circles, and it's depicted this way because those assessments really are driving the process, informing the process. And the way they're displayed here also really stresses that no one assessment is more important than the other and that they're all really supposed to be informing each other. So what you'll see is a community health status assessment at the bottom. That's a very typical type of public health assessment looking at risk factor, mortality, morbidity, measures of quality of life. At the top, you'll see community themes and strengths, really getting at what are the themes, what are the areas of health that interest the community. Part of this assessment also involves identifying the assets and resources already in the community so that they're ready to leverage those assets, identify them and get ready to leverage them for public health improvement. On the right, you'll see the local public health system assessment. This assessment is completed using the National Public Health Performance Standards local instrument. And essentially what this assessment is doing is trying to measure how that jelly bean diagram, that network of public health system partners, collectively delivers the 10 essential public health services. So really not focusing on any one agency, but really all of those who ensure the public's health, how well are they working together to deliver essential public health services? And then the final assessment that you see is the forces of change assessment. So identifying forces, external factors that affect health, that affect communities, really trying to identify them and their associated opportunities and threats. So in a way, you can think about this as a SWOT analysis and how that will impact improvement work as communities move forward. So the idea here is to get a very comprehensive picture of health in a community, thinking about status, thinking about those assets, those themes in a community, thinking about the local public health system and how well it delivers services, and then really bringing into the mix those external forces and how that will affect the system over time and in the future. So communities organize, they articulate a vision of the future, they get a good comprehensive assessment of their community in its current state, and then communities move into the fourth phase, identifying strategic issues. And so these are very broad questions, fundamental policy questions that need to be answered in order for a community to get from its current state, as defined by the assessment, to their vision. And then the rest of the process is really kind of narrowing that down into actionable items and a process for actually implementation and evaluation. So an example of a strategic issue may be, how do we ensure a culturally competent workforce? That is huge, especially if you're thinking about the entire system and the community. Well, let's formulate some goals and strategies that are very specific to our community. Let's look back at that assessment data, make really relevant goals and strategies. Again, still big, but narrowing that down. And then in the action cycle, planning around some of those strategies. Let's think about some interventions that we can do to really get to our goal and ultimately our vision. And then in that action cycle, you'll see an iterative in a almost a quality, continuous quality improvement way of implementation, evaluating, are we really going in the direction that we want to? And if not, let's replan and continue in this iterative way. Communities, on average, will spend about 3 to 5 years going through one iteration of the MAP process. If you think about a standard strategic planning process, you revisit it fully every 3 to 5 years. In the same way, MAP is asking communities to define this community strategic plan, do implementation, then after 3 to 5 years, revisit it. And in this iterative way, you're changing the way that communities think about planning and improvement work. So I will stop there just quickly. Any questions about kind of the MAP phases, because the next piece is really drawing upon those fundamentals. No. You have a question?
Yeah. It sounds very voluntaristic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it can be institutionalized so that it happens even when the volunteers aren't there to work. Have some communities figured out how to institutionalize this process so that it doesn't require so much of the conscious planning that you have very clearly spelled out?
It doesn't work as neatly as that. So we'll see in some states will mandate or strongly encourage locals to use the MAP process, and they'll provide the technical assistance, the training, everything that you would think you would need to implement the process in an effort to institutionalize it. What ends up happening is, because it's top down and really the MAP framework is really about kind of ground up, having the community to agree upon this framework, you'll see tensions because of just the underlying concepts around, you know, bottom up versus top down. In those states that have strongly encouraged and try to create this institutional support, over time you'll see locals really say, okay, I understand why this was put into place. But I would say some of the best MAP communities who really fully embrace the philosophy, the concept, really engage their communities, are the ones who self-identified this as a good fit for them at the time. So we're really big in saying, this is a huge undertaking. We're asking a lot of communities, if you're not ready, you're not ready. But really it should be something that the community as a whole agrees upon is right for them at that time. So yeah, Priscilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that actually, in practice, that's how it happens the majority of the time. So when I use the word framework, I'm using that very purposefully, in that when we talk to communities, we say, what have you already done? What's already in place? And let's fit that into the framework. It's not about throwing it away. It's saying, let's see what you have. And given that there's a philosophy behind MAP, like community engagement, well, let's think about what you've already done, who was involved in those assessments, and maybe there needs to be some revision or supplementing of what's already been done. But the idea being is that we can fit in a lot of the good work that's already going on in communities and build upon that. James.
On the MAP website, is there a list of the states and jurisdictions that mandate MAP?
No. But you, if any of you are interested in about activity in your state, you can contact me, only because that's a little bit politically sensitive. But we are happy to share with you if you are interested in this process and learning if there is activity in your community. I'd be happy to share that information with you. Okay. So here you'll see on the right-hand side, Health Equity Action. So another plug for this excellent book. You'll see a lot of great examples of different approaches communities have taken to really take this huge concept of social justice down into what it means for people in the field. And so on the right, you'll see some examples of health equity actions. And so what I tried to do is show you where the MAP process kind of aligns or where you can integrate some of these activities with the MAP process. So on the right, you'll see engage with communities to develop their capacity and resources to fully participate in social and political processes. So MAP is really not that huge. We're not really reshaping necessarily social and political processes, but you can use MAP and really be deliberate about how you're using the framework throughout the process. Of course, it involves community engagement, but as I mentioned, MAP is not a health equity tool per se, but in the design of the MAP process, and if you're thinking about it from a health equity lens, really think about this idea. How can we engage the community through all the phases, really thinking big about these social and political processes that underline inequity in communities? The idea of mandating a reexamination of public health priorities, practices, uses, resources, this is at the heart of the MAP process. Through the assessment, you're seeing what is already going on in communities, where resources, assets are, getting understanding of practices among the entire local public health system. And so the four assessment is a natural way to really get a good information about these different priorities, practices, and resources. And through the subsequent phases of MAP, if you're taking a health equity approach, really think about this re-examination, really thinking hard about those social, political, economic institutions underlying what you're seeing in that those assessment data. Communicating facts about the forces that produce or undermine health to their constituencies, responsible institutions, and political leaders. This is really something that can be done through forces of change. And again, the guidance in the MAP process is pretty flexible. So it's really a matter of taking that health equity lens and really thinking deeply about these forces that undermine health. And then finally, developing a policy agenda for health equity, identifying strategic activities with constituencies. That's the latter part of that process, and thinking about what needs to be improved and how we're going to go about doing that work. Again, really thinking about it in terms of a health equity lens. By definition, a strategic issue is a fundamental policy issue, so there you see the alignment. However, in practice, you'll see a lot of variability. Sometimes they really are underlying policy issues, but then sometimes there's a reverting back to some more traditional siloed public health activities. This is all to say that if you're taking this approach, again, being very deliberate about how you use the process and really challenge your communities to think about inequity.
Yeah. In the jelly bean diagram, all the jelly beans look the same size.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not reality.
Right.
The underlying planning processes of some of those bigger jelly beans that are actually constraining so much of the things that happen in the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For example, I was talking to some people here at the conference about the lack of healthcare planning and why there isn't a public role for that that looks more like the MAP process.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, banks actually have there is an underlying planning process. When hospitals expand, they do it with capital,
mm-hmm.
and getting access to that capital is crucial to the places where they choose to go. All that's happening in a non-publicly accountable way.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent does this MAP process identify levers of accountability that can influence some of those larger jelly beans?
Mm-hmm. Well, part of organizing for success in the beginning is to do a kind of a environmental scan of what is happening, what other types of planning is occurring. To the extent that you described in that example, it may not necessarily happen in that detailed way. And the guidance isn't that strong in really having people dig very deeply in terms of accountability and thinking about these different these different leverage points. But it is part of the process, and we'll see very good implementation of the MAP process doing exactly what you talked about. There's a lot of activity around health reform and a lot of the opportunities associated with that and partnering around kind of the specifics of existing plans and building them in. And then as you move around, through the MAP process, a lot of that conversation comes up. One of the principles of the MAP process is dialogue and trying to avoid common challenges that you'll see in partnerships and communities around turf issues, difference of mission, other areas where people are not seeing, they're not on the same page. And so part of the MAP process in creating a vision helps with that and really dialoguing and talking about how different previous planning, existing planning can align, how different interests can align with the process. So it is built in, and I mean, as you can see, there's a lot going on here that can be, and what I described is a very kind of simplistic, superficial description of what actually happens in the field. Okay. So in this book here, you'll also see some other examples of health equity action, and I won't spend a lot of time, but you'll see a lot of these activities could easily be integrated into the MAP process. So you could have a health equity team, if that is your intent to use the MAP process in that way, be the one to really steer the MAP process and really plan through the different phases. Assess staff understanding of health equity. A lot of times before communities start embarking on a MAP process, there's a lot of effort within the facilitating organization, typically a health department, to really make sure everyone's on the same page about what they're committing to. And so part of that could be also educating staff around health equity and really what it means to address inequities. Thinking about how the workforce can respond to root causes of inequity, raising awareness, encouraging dialogue among your system partners, this idea of analyzing, developing policies. So you can see a lot of this work, the framework allows for it to be built in so that communities wanting to address inequity can do so. Here are some just other examples, the building strategic alliances with the social justice community. So in that jelly bean diagram, I had like civil rights organizations are really those non-traditional partners that public health, at least health departments, don't naturally gravitate towards. So when you're thinking about that jelly bean diagram from a health equity lens, thinking about who are the key players. There's a lot of different organizations, entities, in communities working on social justice issues, and maybe it's not under the umbrella of health explicitly, but that they should be brought into the process. In conducting those assessments, really asking the right questions, thinking about the central social justice question at the bottom, about why inequality exists and the structures and policies and practices that contribute to inequity. Looking beyond just behavior, our status quo, the typical activities that we've always been funded to do, and really think about those strategic underlying root causes that are at the heart of why we see the health issues we do in communities. And then identifying strategic partners, having the community engaged in every phase of the process. So I will stop there, and I do want to let you know about some specific types of resources that we have related to health equity. We have a toolkit through our Nature website. There's a new learning collaborative, so there'll be some new learning modules that will be available for practitioners. The book that I've probably, Rich would be very happy I advertised many times. Again, and if you're interested, I have a promotional flyer, which I'll put in the back of the room. There's also a social network dedicated to health equity, and so there's a lot of conversation and dialogue among leaders in the country about this issue. And then the health equity campaign, which also involves supporting the use and encouraging the use of natural causes, which is a nice segue to Cynthia's presentation. And Richard and Ashley are members of our health equity staff. And so if you're interested in learning more, if you just go to the NATCHO website, topics under justice. And then myself and Mary Kate are the lead staff for the MAP process. And so everything can be found on the NATCHO.org website.